Imagine waking up and finding out, 30% of your neighbors just completely abandoned the internet's biggest search engine overnight.
Right, just vanished.
Yeah. Or that an entire state legislature in like this incredibly divided political climate we have right now voted 110-0 to aggressively audit the most powerful AI companies on Earth.
It's definitely a massive shift.
It really is. So welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are looking at this really fascinating stack of notes from the Tech and Knight report, specifically their May 2026 State of Global Tech Analysis.
And I mean, it is quite the stack of notes. On the surface, you're looking at six massive, seemingly completely disconnected stories, and they cross like every single sector of the digital economy.
But when you really spend time with these sources, this hidden narrative emerges that kind of connects every single one of them. We are witnessing this massive sudden shift in, well, in control and trust. Think about it like this. When you buy a car, there is this fundamental expectation that when you turn the steering wheel to the left, the car goes left.
Right. Basic physics.
Yeah, you provide the input, you get the output. You're in control. But what this report reveals is that the tech industry's kind of Wild West era is facing a full-blown rebellion from governments, from everyday users, and even from artists.
Because they feel like that steering wheel has just been totally taken away from them.
Exactly.
And we are definitely watching the foundations of the digital world being renegotiated right now, like in real time. The assumption that major tech companies can just operate with zero friction and have unlimited access to our data, or that, algorithms always know what is best for us, I mean, that's just simply collapsing.
Which is exactly why you're here with me today. You're going to help us look past these headlines and figure out why, May 2026 is such a pivotal moment in tech history for you listening.
Happy to be here.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with the top-down rebellion, right? The government stepping in. So Illinois just passed the Artificial Intelligence Safety Measures Act, SB 315. And the detail that jumped out at me wasn't even just the text of the law. It was that staggering vote. 110-0 in the Illinois House of Representatives. Unanimous.
I mean, getting a unanimous bipartisan vote on complex technology regulation, that tells you something really profound about the universal level of concern here.
Right. It never happened.
Never. It signals a hard stop to the era of purely voluntary industry commitments. Because up until now, these companies have essentially just signed like non-binding pledges to be careful.
Yeah, like we promise we'll be good.
Exactly. But Illinois is moving the U.S. into an era of regulation with actual enforceable teeth.
And the core of this law targets what they call frontier AI models. From what I understand, these are the really big cutting-edge systems, right? Like the GPT-4s, the Claudes, the Geminis of the world.
Yes, the massive foundational models.
And the law mandates independent third-party audits for safety. It feels a bit like restaurant health inspections.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Right. Because up until now, we've essentially been letting big tech inspect their own kitchens. They've been coming out and telling us, hey, don't worry, the chicken is cooked, just trust us.
And now the government is sending in external inspectors who have zero financial stake in the restaurant.
Exactly.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the reason they're sending in those inspectors isn't just because they're worried about a chatbot saying something mildly offensive, or generating a weird image with too many fingers.
Right.
The legislation explicitly focuses on catastrophic risk management.
Wow. That is a heavy phrase. Catastrophic risk.
It is. We're talking about the potential for these incredibly powerful frontier models to be utilized to, say, develop biological weapons.
Oh, wow.
Or to conduct massive automated cyber attacks on critical infrastructure. The compute power behind these systems is so immense that their capabilities aren't always fully understood, even by the people who created them.
That's terrifying.
Right. So Illinois is forcing these companies to publicly publish exactly how they plan to mitigate those existential threats, and then having those external auditors verify those plans before they can even deploy the model.
So it's basically a blueprint.
Yeah, it establishes a template that is highly likely to cascade across other states, potentially forcing a unified federal framework eventually.
So the government saying enough is one thing. But what's equally fascinating, this Take a Knight report, is that everyday users are staging their own rebellion.
Oh,
We're
absolutely.
seeing a massive rejection of unchecked AI at the consumer level, which, well, it brings us to the great Google Exodus.
The great Exodus, yeah.
So at Google I/O in May, they announced that AI overviews, you know, those AI-generated summaries right at the top of your search results, would become the default experience. No opt-out.
And the immediate fallout from that single decision was just staggering.
Staggering. In the 7 days following that announcement, installs of the privacy-focused search engine DuckDuckGo surged an average of 20.8% week over week in the U.S. alone.
Which is huge for them.
It actually peaked at a 37.6% surge on May 26th. But, okay, here's the most telling statistic. DuckDuckGo has a very specific URL. No, i.duckduckgo.com, which disables all artificial intelligence features entirely.
Right.
Traffic to that specific page surged nearly 23%.
Meaning people are actively, deliberately hunting for a way to just turn the machine off.
But wait, isn't Google kind of shooting itself in the foot here? I mean, they built a multi-billion dollar empire on being the world's best discovery tool.
Right.
Why would they cannibalize their own traffic and alienate the exact power users and researchers who built their reputation just to become, like, a mediocre answer machine?
Well, that is the multi-billion dollar question they're wrestling with internally right now. I mean, the core of this user friction really comes down to AI hallucinations and the nature of intent.
Okay, break that down.
Sure. So when an AI confidently presents totally false information as absolute fact at the very top of a Google search, it comes with the implicit endorsement of the most trusted information engine in human history.
That makes sense.
If you're a casual user, you know, just checking the weather, asking a basic trivia question, maybe it's fine. But if you're doing serious research or trying to find a primary source or even troubleshooting a complex coding issue, an AI overview suddenly becomes a massive roadblock.
Because it's hiding the actual information you want behind a wall of, like, algorithmic guessing.
Exactly.
You literally have to scroll past a synthesized paragraph that might be totally wrong just to find the blue links you actually came for in the first place.
And that's why we're seeing the onset of genuine AI fatigue. Users are experiencing this philosophical shift. They're voting with their downloads because they want to reclaim serendipitous discovery.
Yeah.
They want the agency to evaluate multiple original sources themselves rather than having a machine kind of pre-chew their information and spit out a single flattened answer.
Basically, they want the steering wheel back.
Exactly.
And that same AI fatigue we're seeing in search engines, that rejection of algorithms guessing what we want, is manifesting in an even more personal space, which is how we capture our own memories.
Oh, the photography shift.
Yeah, people are craving authenticity over algorithmic perfection in their photography right now.
Which is a profound pivot. I mean, considering that for the last decade, smartphone photography has been entirely driven by computational enhancement.
Right. So let's talk about Helite Mark III.
Mm-hmm.
This is a professional camera app by Lux Camera, and they just released a major update featuring their Process 02 engine.
Yep.
And its entire selling point, the thing they are shouting from the rooftops,
yeah,
is that it explicitly avoids AI and machine learning entirely.
It is effectively the anti-AI camera movement.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. It feels exactly like the resurgence of vinyl records.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Right. In this hyper-digital, mathematically perfect world where, you know, Spotify can instantly stream any song flawlessly, people suddenly want analog warmth. They buy vinyl because they want the crackle. They want the tactile experience.
The imperfections.
Yes. With photography, people want the grain and the physical reality of a moment, not a hyper-processed digital painting of a moment.
The vinyl analogy captures the psychology perfectly. Because when a standard smartphone camera takes a picture today, it's not actually capturing a single moment in time anymore.
Right. It's doing a bunch of math.
Exactly. It's taking multiple frames before and after you hit the button, then analyzing them with AI, smoothing out the skin, lightening the shadows, brightening the sky, and giving you an algorithm's interpretation of what it thinks the scene should look like.
Huh.
It completely strips away the photographer's intent in favor of this universal, bright perfection.
But Helite Mark III is going in the exact opposite direction. The notes say they actually collaborated with a Hollywood colorist named Cullen Kelly to create 5 cinematic looks.
Right, real color science.
Yeah, we're talking about things like Valencia for landscapes or Chroma Noir for this incredibly dramatic, high-contrast black and white. And they point out these aren't just cheap Instagram filters slapped on top of a JPEG.
No, not at all.
They simulate real film halation, which is that little organic glow you get around bright lights on actual film stock and physical color science.
And add to that, it doesn't just work for standard iPhone photos. The built-in editor can actually process raw files from professional dedicated cameras like your Sony and Nikon rigs.
And just for anyone who isn't a massive photography nerd, a raw file is basically the digital equivalent of a film negative,
oh,
right?
Oh, that's spot on.
It contains all the uncompressed data captured by the sensor without the camera throwing away information to make the file smaller.
That is exactly it. So Halid is giving users this crucial middle ground. Technology is being used here to enhance the human eye and give the user more control over that massive amount of raw data.
Instead of replacing the human eye entirely with an AI smoothing tool, it's a rebellion for authenticity. But as users demand more control over their tools and more privacy from these algorithms, the platforms themselves are fundamentally changing the deal.
They have to.
Right. If privacy laws and user behavior mean our data is harder to harvest, the era of the free internet is ending. So let's look at Meta's massive subscription pivot.
This represents one of the most significant business model shifts in the entire history of the social web.
Meta has launched global pricing tiers. You can now get Instagram Plus or Facebook Plus for $3.99 a month. WhatsApp Plus is $2.99 a month.
Yep.
And they have a creator-focused tier called Meta One Essential for $14.99 a month, which includes a verification badge, impersonation protection, and a customizable link sheet.
Right.
Why is the company that practically defined the free ad-supported internet suddenly asking for our credit cards?
Well, because the targeted ad-supported model has suffered a structural blow, you really have to trace this back to Apple's iOS 14.5 update, specifically the App Tracking Transparency Framework.
Oh, that was the update where Apple started showing that pop-up box asking, ask app not to track, right?
Yes. For years, apps could just silently share your device identifier with this massive ecosystem of data brokers. They knew what shoes you looked at on a website, and then boom, they showed you an ad for those exact shoes on Instagram.
I always hated that.
Right, everyone did. So Apple gave users a simple button to cut that data sharing off, and the vast majority of people clicked it. That one single change broke the invisible tether, and it cost Meta an estimated $10 billion in revenue in 2022 alone.
$10 billion. With a B. Just from people clicking a pop-up button.
When that hyper-specific data gets cut off, ads become way less effective, and advertisers simply refuse to pay a premium for them. So subscriptions are a vital hedge for Meta to survive this privacy-first era.
That makes sense.
Think about the underlying math here. Meta has roughly 3 billion monthly active users. If they convince just 5% of them to pay $4 a month, that is $7.2 billion in highly predictable, high-margin annual recurring revenue.
But wait, is this a worst-of-both-worlds scenario for us, the users?
How so?
Because looking at the report, it doesn't sound like they're turning off the ad machine entirely. Are they just going to keep subjecting the free users to algorithmic manipulation while moving all the good, previously free features like basic account security and customer service behind a paywall for the premium users?
I mean, that is the pessimistic view, and frankly, a very valid concern given their history. But what's fascinating here is how a subscription model might actually fix the core toxic incentives of social media.
Okay, I'm listening. How does paying them fix the toxicity?
Well, the old saying goes, when you don't pay for a product, you are the product.
Right.
In a purely free model, the platform's only goal is to maximize your time on platform to show you more ads. That often means the algorithm deliberately promotes enraging, highly polarized, or outrage-inducing content, because human psychology dictates that anger drives engagement.
We've all doom-scrolled before.
Exactly. But consider the shift in dynamics if you are paying $3.99 a month directly to Meta.
Their incentive structure flips.
Completely. Now, they have to deliver genuine, tangible value to you so you don't cancel your subscription next month. It is the difference between a free casino buffet, where they are just trying to keep you on the gambling floor as long as possible,
yeah,
and a sit-down restaurant where you're a paying customer who expects a quality experience. It fundamentally changes the relationship from extraction to actual service.
That is a brilliant way to look at it. It aligns their financial success with our actual satisfaction.
Exactly.
But trusting the tools we pay for, whether it's an AI auditor or a camera app or a social media subscription, it requires a secure digital foundation. And right now, according to the final section of this report, the actual builders of that foundation are under a massive, highly sophisticated attack.
The hidden war in our software supply chains. This is perhaps the most critical yet least visible story in the entire Tekin Knight dossier.
Let's look at the Glassworm takedown. On May 26th, CrowdStrike, Google, and the Shadow Server Foundation executed a synchronized global takedown of the Glasswarm botnet.
Yeah. Huge operation.
Yeah, and what is terrifying about this malware is that it didn't target everyday users like you or me. It targeted software developers. It lived in open source repositories like NPM, PyPI, and Visual Studio Code extensions.
Which requires a bit of context.
Go for it.
For those who aren't software engineers, NPM and PyPI are essentially massive public libraries where developers share baseline code.
Right.
Instead of writing everything from scratch, a developer building an app will just pull in a piece of code from NPM to handle a login screen, or a piece of code from PyPI to process data.
So it's like, instead of trying to break into your house, the thief gets a job at the lock factory.
Oh, that's good.
They subtly change the mold on the assembly line, so every single new lock sold in the country naturally accepts their master key.
That is exactly how a digital supply chain attack works. Glasswarm represents a huge paradigm shift. Adversaries are no longer bothering to attack the finished, fortified apps. They are weaponizing developers' own GitHub access to poison the well before the app is even built.
Wait, how does that actually happen in practice? Like, how do they get into the lock factory?
Well, when a developer's personal machine gets infected with Glasswarm, the malware quietly steals their API tokens.
Okay.
Think of an API token as a digital VIP pass that proves the developer is who they say they are. The malware then just sits and waits for that trusted developer to do a routine code update.
Oh, man.
Yeah. When they push that update to the repository, the malware injects subtle malicious code into the package. And because the push comes with that VIP pass, it comes from an authenticated, highly trusted source.
Yeah.
It sails right past normal security checks.
So the developer unknowingly builds the backdoor into the software themselves?
Yes.
And then thousands of other companies download that compromised code library and build it into the apps the rest of us use every day.
Which is why taking it down required such a massive coordinated effort. CrowdStrike, Google, and Shadow Server had to simultaneously target Glasswarm's command and control servers.
The puppet masters.
Right. The servers sending instructions to the infected developable machines. They had to hit them all at once just to sever the connection.
And the really chilling part of the report is that the tools to execute these kinds of sophisticated attacks are being democratized.
Highly democratized.
We're looking at a dual threat hitting Europe and Latin America right now. On one hand, you have Grandorero, which is a veteran Windows banking Trojan hitting 45 different countries.
A classic.
Right. But on the other hand, you have BTMOB, which is a brand new Android remote access Trojan.
Hmm.
And the detail about BTMOB that is truly alarming is that it's sold with a no-code builder tool.
This raises an important question about the industrialization of cybercrime. We are really looking at the explosion of malware as a service, or MAS.
Malware as a service.
Okay.
Like a legitimate software subscription model, but for committing felonies.
Exactly. We really have to drop the stereotype of the brilliant, solitary hacker writing custom code in a dark basement. The modern cybercrime underground operates like a Silicon Valley startup.
That's wild.
BTMOB is sold on Telegram channels with slick web interfaces, subscription tiers. They even have customer support.
Customer support for malware.
Yeah. With a no-code builder, a common criminal with absolutely zero technical skills can log into a dashboard, click a few drop-down menus, and generate a highly customized version of this Android malware.
And once that custom malware gets onto your phone, the capabilities are terrifying. The report notes it grants full device control.
Complete control.
It can record ambient audio through your microphone. It can display fake overlay screens on top of your legitimate banking apps. So when you think you are logging into Chase or Bank of America, you're actually typing your password directly into the attacker's server.
But the part that really changes the game is the SMS interception.
Yeah, talk about that.
It intercepts your text messages entirely, meaning those two-factor authentication codes your bank texts you to verify your identity.
Yep.
The malware captures them and hides them from your screen. The attacker gets the code, logs into your bank, and drains your account from halfway around the world. And your phone never even buzzes to warn you.
So getting a text message to verify your identity is basically useless now.
It is worse than useless, actually. It provides a false sense of security. The MAS economy has completely compromised SMS routing.
Wow.
This is why the report strongly emphasizes that relying on text messages for two-factor authentication is dead. Transitioning to hardware security keys, you know, those physical USB devices you have to tap to log in, or at the very least, dedicated authenticator apps that generate codes locally on your device, is no longer optional.
It's the absolute baseline requirement for protecting your digital life.
100%.
Okay, we have covered an incredible amount of ground today. Let's pull these threads together.
Let's do it.
We started with a 110-0 vote in Illinois, sending health inspectors into big tech's AI kitchens to prevent catastrophic risks.
Yeah.
We saw a massive surge of users fleeing to DuckDuckGo to escape Google's mandatory AI hallucinations. We explored how photographers are flocking to tools like Halide Mark III to reclaim analog authenticity and human intent.
The vinyl of photography.
Exactly. Then we looked at Meta, asking us to pay $3.99 a month to shift their business model from extracting our data to actually serving us. And finally, we uncover the invisible wars being fought in our software lock factories against no-code malware that can silently intercept our text messages.
It's a lot. And every single one of these stories, at its core, is a battle over who gets to hold the steering wheel. The era of blind trust in technology is just over.
It really is. And so, for you listening to this right now, I want you to think about your own daily habits. Where are you currently accepting algorithms making choices for you?
Right.
What digital tools are you actually willing to pay for to reclaim your privacy? And where do you need to upgrade your own personal security, simply because you can no longer afford to blindly trust the software you download?
I think the most vital takeaway from this entire May 2026 report is a somewhat unsettling thought to leave you with.
Okay, what is it?
If we can now pay $3.99 a month to avoid social media manipulation, if we can use specialized paid tools to dodge AI hallucinations, and if we have to buy enterprise-grade security keys to stop malware as a service,
yeah.
Are we heading toward a future where digital truth, privacy, and safety are no longer basic human rights, but luxury goods available only to those who can afford them?
Wow. So who really gets to hold the steering wheels? How much does it cost? It's a question we are all going to have to answer sooner rather than later. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay safe, and we will catch you next time.